Blog Talk Radio.
Massive, massive fire going up in London, and still trying to contain it. And it is 6:06. It is the 14th day of June. And good morning to you. Have a little. I'm sorry. I have a cold. Hopefully, my voice will warm up along the way. But here's a little bit from this story. I have a few different clips for you. Here's BBC. And this is posted not too long ago. Just a picture so far. Just massive, massive flames coming out of this thing. I can't. It looks like nobody would survive it, but fortunately, we do know that a lot of people were able to get away. Here is from CBS San Francisco.
London, a tower of fire and smoke as an apartment building goes up in flames with people inside. Hello and welcome. I'm Elizabeth Cook in for Veronica tonight. Here's a live look at that fire. It is 6 a.m. there. You can see there are still some flames with plenty of smoke shooting into the sky. Witnesses say the fire started on one side of the residential building and quickly spread, engulfing the entire structure. There are reports some people got out. Others may have been trapped. Hundreds of firefighters have been fighting the flames for hours at the 27-story Grenfell Tower. This is all happening in the Kensington area near Notting Hill in the West London suburbs. Cameras captured this image of someone standing in a window. There were no ladders to reach them and no obvious effort to rescue or even evacuate. People on the ground have been calling to those inside to shout out their unit number for rescuers.
What floor are you at?
Seven.
Neighbors say they could hear people calling for help as the flames spread.
We could hear people screaming, help me, help me, and flashing their phone lights to let people know that they were there. When we first seen it, it was only a few floors, and then it just spread up all the building and then onto the adjacent side, and it's just spread all across.
I can't believe the way it's
Spread so quick. Authorities say there were evacuations and at least 15 people treated for smoke inhalation. No word yet on any deaths, but it could be some time before fire crews can actually get inside the building to search for survivors.
Wow. Can you imagine that? And I have a few more clips for you here. And this is from U.S. News Today.
We have some breaking news to show you here. This is coming from London. This is a huge fire. It has engulfed a 24-story apartment building. Again, live pictures coming from London. This is our breaking news right now on CNN. About 200 firefighters, we're told, have been deployed to battle this fire as rescue workers try to evacuate residents. We're told a number of people are being treated for a range of injuries. This is in North Kensington. Again, the fire broke out before daybreak, local time. A statement posted on Twitter earlier Wednesday that London police say two people are currently being treated for smoke inhalation. But an eyewitness says he saw people jumping from this building. Again, breaking news out of London, a huge blaze has engulfed a 24-story apartment building. As we look at these live pictures coming in, about 200 firefighters deployed to this scene to battle this fire. Rescue workers trying to evacuate the residents there. Fire broke out before daybreak, local time. We're hearing that they're treating a number of people for a number of injuries, at least two people being treated for smoke inhalation. And eyewitnesses say they saw people jumping from the building. Make sure you stay with us. We'll keep a watch on these pictures and on this story and bring you the very latest as it's warranted.
Really incredible stories about this from last night into today. And a resident of Grenville Tower describing seeing people throw children to safety?
Left in this situation, there's only the stairs. The stairs is smoke, it's dark, it's scary, it's trip hazard. There's fall hazard, there's all sorts. There's elderly, there's children, there's disabled people. It's all sorts of, there's luggages in the stairwell. You know, even some of the stairwells and some lights were not working. So it was so dark in there. It's incredible. It's just, it's incredible we survived. So many people were left inside. We had so many relatives and families and friends that called and said, we are still trapped in. Let the fire services know that we are still here. We are trapped. This kid that called and said he was trapped in his room. So it's you know, it's a very horrible situation. It's, lives have been lost. I can confirm lives have been lost. There has been fatalities of our, some of our friends, some of our family, some of our loved ones, our neighbors.
I'm really sorry.
It's heart aching. It really is. You just don't know. Right now, we can only offer prayers. We can only offer support to the people who've lost loved ones. We can only pray for those who have passed away. We can only praise the fire services for their efforts.
Here's another clip. You could hear people screaming in pain. Grenfell Tower witness. And this is from Good Morning Britain.
We can talk to an eyewitness, Tia Abrahams, who's at the scene. Tia, how close are you?
I'm literally about 5 to 7 minutes away from where the fire started at Grenfell's power block.
Do you know anybody who's inside the block?
No, I don't know anyone that was inside the block. What has happened is I've got a call from a friend of mine. Where the fire happened was 5 minutes from where I live, and I arrived there just before the fire brigade had gotten there, so it was literally just about as the fire was beginning, really.
It must be an absolutely terrible scene. What have you seen in the last few hours?
It was horrible. There was people banging on their windows, screaming for help. There was even two young children literally staring down towards everyone at the bottom. They was on the other side from where the fire was, on the other side of the block. It was horrible. You could hear people screaming in pain from the fire.
Tia, were you able to see the emergency services rescue people from the building?
Yeah, I did see a couple of firefighters actually escorting people out of the block. They looked okay from what I could see. However, I was looking up from a higher viewer point.
And are there people around the bottom of the building? Are they still getting people out?
I don't know right now at this minute in time. However, the last time I checked was at least about 40 minutes ago, and there were still people there. There were still small fires that were happening. It just wasn't good. There were so many sirens, floods in the area, fire brigades, ambulances.
So they've got pictures in here where you can see that there are people staring out of the windows in the midst of this in the midst of this fire. So, you know, you assume the worst. Here's a clip from Radio Free Europe. Many casualties. There has to be a lot of casualties. From what I can tell, 24-story building that was an older building and had a lot of either refugees or people that were not wealthy. Check this out. Radio Free Europe. You have a picture of a person spinning a flag out of their window. I think that is just photography. Residents can still be seen inside burning Grenfell Tower. From Good Morning Britain.
The resident that we saw at the window waving some form of sheet and using his phone. We've just seen a sprinkler of water from presumably the firefighters at the scene raining down over him. Presumably they're trying to save him. I think it's a man there at the window. We can't really tell from this shot, but it's obviously a dramatic search and rescue going on now for anybody who may be in that tower block and the like.
There's been truly horrific scenes here this morning. As soon as I arrived, my stomach churned as I saw the blaze before me. I then spoke to residents in the area who were shocked, had tears in their eyes, saying that they were looking and they could hear the screams of families who were particularly on the top floors, shining their torches, trying to get attention, trying to get out of the building. But there doesn't seem to be any help. No ladders have been deployed from the outside. I'm not a firefighter expert. There are obviously going to be good reasons and investigations for that. I think we can see the gentleman now waving as we speak. His hands there appear to Susanna. So he's still there. That is good news. The fire brigade are just out of shot, obviously just behind our position. They will be able to see him. They'll be giving him advice, and I suspect in a moment they'll be probably doused with water again to try and keep that room cool. As I said, where we are here this morning, 100 or so metres away, we can really feel the heat. We can feel the smoke in the back of our throats.
So it's just really a terrible situation. Now here's one more clip from the BBC. London fire like a horror movie.
About 1:30, I'm in bed with my girlfriend. She's fast asleep. My little girl's next door fast asleep. So I'm drifting in and out of consciousness, and I smell something plasticky. So I jump up because I'm worried about the devices we've got, the Kindles, the iPads, stuff like that. So I've gone and checked everything. Everything's okay, but I can still smell this smell. Gone into the kitchen. I've opened the window, lit up a cigarette. As I was smoking the fag, I can hear shouting. So I'm wondering what's going on, and I hear a lady going, "It's getting bigger, it's getting bigger." So I think there's something seriously wrong here. So I've gone to the front door, I've looked through this fire hole, and I can see the smoke everywhere. I've opened the door. There's all neighbours running out. Get down. The fireman's there. Get down the stairs, he's shouting. So I've gone inside. I've put my dressing gown and I've grabbed the little girl, put her under the dressing gown, got my girlfriend, and ran down the stairs. Now, our advice has always been told, if there's ever a fire, stay in your flat. That's when our flames penetrate the door. If we had stayed in that flat, we would have been perished. And it just spread like wildfire because it was covered in cladding, the block of flats. The smoke alarm was useless. You know, I mean, it wouldn't have woke up nothing. You know, the smoke alarm was that good, and I could only hear it in the hallway, not in your flat. It was horrendous. People up at the windows screaming, and the thing went up in, it felt like seconds. It was just going up and up and up and up. I'd never seen nothing like it. It was like something out of a Hollywood disaster movie.
You know about the people who got out?
Yeah. Well, I've just seen my neighbour in the centre there. He got out, luckily enough. I also see a lady that was up on the 22nd floor. She's got 6 kids. She left them all when she got to the front. Still behind them. There's kids screaming up at windows, smashing the windows, explosions going off. It was I'm shaking still. I can't believe it. I'm in shock. I'm just grateful that I got us out of there. If we'd listened to them and stayed in that house, we would have perished.
Do you know how many people live in the block of flats?
Well, there's 24 or 25 floors and there's 6 flats on each floor. So, you know, there's got to be a couple of people. Some have one bedroom, some 2, 3, 4, you know. There's a wide range of rooms in the flats.
We hear that there was some gas taking place.
Yeah, but about 6 weeks ago, there was a local resident that owned the tenancy, and he kept saying to us, look, they're going to come around and try and change everything to gas. We refused to do it. They're going to ask you to sign it. And I go, well, it's all right. I still use electricity anyway, so they're not going to put my gas pipes through here. But I did see them working on the stairwell on the gas pipes, but not on our flat. But I did see over the weeks it going on the work. And then during the fire, there was all explosions going off, windows were firing out, and it was all blue flames, which struck me gas, you know.
Were you able to help any other people get out?
Well, no, I was just concentrating on the little girl and my girlfriend. Once we was out, we were checking people was okay. I was just in my boxer shorts, no shoes on, nothing. There was a lady outside a few hundred yards up the road with a refuse bag, with trousers, shoes for people to put on because everyone's running out in their 90s and whatnot, you know. And it was just horrendous. I'm just hoping to God that not too many people have perished.
You know, it looked like a slum. It looked like a large building that was old and was not well taken care of. But, I mean, the port of the flames going up so fast is not good. And the stairwells filled full of people's, belongings and stuff. I mean, it might have been just an absolute fire trap. We'll take a break here and come back and talk a little bit about Jeff Sessions. Excuse me. 621 Kelly O'Connell AM, Las Cruces AM, 1450, 523, 1450. We'll be right back. I've got some breaking news for you here. Representative Steve Scalise has been shot. His aide was also shot. And it appears that he, 26 minutes ago, breaking, shot in Virginia during baseball practice. So I don't know what it's about. I've got a little bit of few clips for you on this, but it's crazy days in House Majority Whip Steve Scalise. Wow. And he's from his place is Louisiana, so see if I can get a clip here for you. Here's something from CNN. Give me one second here. Oh, I got a lot of clips open at once, just trying to find out. Shot in the hip, and multiple congressional aides were hit by a gunman with a rifle who opened up fire at baseball practice in Virginia Wednesday morning. Taken to the hospital. Representative Ron DeSantis, Republican Florida, told Fox that he had just left before the shooting. As he walked to his car, a man asked DeSantis if he was Republican or if it was Republicans or Democrats practicing. About 3 minutes the shooting began, DeSantis said. Wow, that's really nuts. Shooting began 7:15 a.m., lasted 10 minutes. Behind third base, I see a rifle. I hear Steve Scalise over near second base scream. The shots were reported on East Monroe Street in Delray, Alexandria. Scalise, 51, is the House Majority Whip. He has studied computer science at Louisiana State, and he endorsed Trump last year. So let me see what I can find in terms of a clip for you.
For you right now at this hour, and we are just getting very, very scant details, but it appears that something has happened at a congressional ball game. There was some sort of baseball or softball practice early morning in Alexandria, Virginia, and we understand that there have been gunshots fired at this game.
Police are on the scene right now. This was the GOP baseball team, we're being told. They were practicing or preparing or playing. Maybe there's some anticipation of a game that was supposed to be scheduled for tomorrow. The suspect is said to be in custody. Who was hit, why this was done, that's still unclear at this hour, but it's obviously of great concern. You had members of Congress down there. Senator Paul is on that team. We don't know who was involved or if anybody's hurt. As soon as we do, we will...
Somebody is hurt. It is Steve Scalise, and here's a little bit more from Fox News Insider.
Right now, we are just learning Louisiana Congressman and House Majority Whip Steve Scalise has been shot.
Aides say he was practicing baseball early this morning in Alexandria, Virginia, across the river from Washington, when 50 shots were reportedly fired. Another local report saying five or more people were shot, many of them aides of Mr. Scalise. Congressman's condition unclear at this point.
Let's bring in Chad Pergram, who's our congressional reporter, and he has some more information on this breaking news. Chad, what can you tell us?
Each morning, members of the House who play in this congressional baseball game, which is scheduled for tomorrow night at the Nationals Park in Washington, it's a charity baseball game. It goes back to 1909. The Democrats play the Republicans. They practice at a field in Alexandria, Virginia. And about 7:15 this morning, I am told by multiple sources, a gunman with a rifle arrived at the practice and began firing. I am told that Steve Scalise, the majority whip who plays, was shot in the hip. We're also told that multiple aides were shot as well. We don't have any conditions at this point. They usually have security at this event. In fact, they have kind of amped up the security of this over the years. But they take this baseball game pretty seriously, which is why they go out and they practice about 6 o'clock in the morning in preparation for the ball game tomorrow. It's a point of pride between the sides. Now, I'm
we
told
do have some breaking news for you right now at this hour, and we are just getting...
It is unclear if the gunman was apprehended, but I am told by an aide that the shooting stopped after about that point. I live in Alexandria, Virginia, just a couple of miles from where this is, and I got an alert that there had been a shooting at this area, which that strikes me based on knowing the city of Alexandria across the river from Washington, D.C. That's an odd location to have a shooting. There was a lot of activity here in Alexandria this morning, police activity. You could hear sirens and things, and we're trying to figure out just what happened. But the
right.
game was scheduled for tomorrow morning.
Okay. Well, so Chad, let me ask you a question. Is this something that you'd have to schedule? Would you have to say, I need that field at 6? Or would that be something that just a sitting congressman would just say, I just need to go practice and find a field?
No, they scheduled this. And, in fact, a memo was shared with me just yesterday, an internal memo that people had sent around about security for the ball game and
right.
how members should enter the baseball stadium and so on.
Okay. Chad, I've just gotten a message from Senator Mike Lee from Utah, who says that he is hearing that Scalise was shot in the hip and is expected to be okay. That is good news. According to Senator Lee, the shooter was shot by Scalise's security detail. And according to the senator, the shooter is dead.
Okay. Now, that's like I said, this is just coming in here. I have, just as you read that question here, an update from the Alexandria police here. That says they're investigating multiple shootings, and they say suspect believed in custody, urging people to stay away from the area. I should note that because Steve Scalise is one of the members of the House Republican leadership, he gets a detail, a U.S. Capitol police detail that go with him everywhere they go. But obviously, you know, if he's out on the diamond, they're not standing right next to
right.
him on the field.
Right.
Are these, oh,
we
ahead.
Have been told that two of them, as far as we know this morning, have also been shot. Two
agents.
Of the security agents that were with them.
And these are U.S. Capitol police officers.
Right.
US Capitol
and
police
who
officers.
Else do we know, Chad, that was on the field with the congressman? Any of his colleagues?
Sure. I mean, these are members. Only members of Congress are allowed to play in the baseball game. For instance, I was told just the other day that Mick Mulvaney, who used to be a congressman, who's now the budget director, he played for many years when he was in the House. He showed up, actually participated in the practice, but he can't play because he is not in Congress anymore.
We also understand that the shot, the whip was shot, Mr. Scalise was shot in the dugout itself. Let me ask you something, Chad. When you get to that level as in Congress, do you have the same body man? Do you have the same Secret Service with you every day? Or are these people very familiar with him?
Yeah, I mean, you have some of the same people. They have a protect that are assigned to the Speaker, the Majority Leader in the Senate, the Minority Leader, the President Pro Tem, Orrin Hatch from Utah. Steve Scalise is obviously not in the line of succession to the presidency as Speaker Ryan is, or Orrin Hatch, the President Pro Tem of the Senate. But they go with him all the time. In fact, I noted there were two events that I was with Steve Scalise in private just here in the past couple of weeks, and his security detail in one case was in the room, just kind of standing off to the side because they were familiar with who the people were. And this was in the U.S. Capitol in his office. Another time, they stood out the room. But you see them even walk through the halls of Congress with him. If he's going to a social function, they're with him as well.
All right. I tell you what, Chad, stand by. We'll be back with you in a moment. Just receiving word that FM Talk 1050 has tweeted out that one of the people there used his belt as a tourniquet to stop the bleeding of GOP whip Steve Scalise. Also, according to one other message I've just gotten directly from Senator Mike Lee, he says there was at least one other person shot, including a Scalise staffer who was shot in the chest and is currently en route to the hospital. Now,
right.
These are accounts from Senator Mike Lee, who texted me 12 minutes ago asking if I had heard about the shooting that just occurred at the congressional baseball practice. We had not. It is over the river from Washington, D.C. in Alexandria,
right.
Virginia. This is something where they get ready for the big game.
The big game tomorrow night. And this is all breaking right now. We are bringing you everything we know.
All right. Pretty amazing stuff. Let's take a break for local news. Kelly O'Connell, 634. AM Las Cruces, same 1450, 523, 1450. We'll be right back. It's pretty scary that the guy went out there to shoot Republicans, though. Excuse me. A little bit of a cold here. I do apologize. Here is the opening statement from Jeff Sessions in his investigatory interview with the Congress. And I'm telling you, these people, these leftists, these Democrats are desperate. And let me say something else. You've got so much emphasis on stirring the pot and making people look like monsters and Satans out there, especially against Trump, especially against the Republicans. You can't be surprised when some nutcase grabs a rifle and says, I can't, you know, I've got to do something about this. The left really needs to back off the demonization. It is creating a very dangerous situation. Here's Sessions.
We're to tell the whole the truth and the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Please be seated. Thank you, Attorney General Sessions. The floor is yours.
Thank you much. Thank you very much, Chairman Burr and Ranking Member Warner, for allowing me to publicly appear before your committee today. I appreciate the committee's critically important efforts to investigate Russian interference with our democratic processes. Interference can never be tolerated, and I encourage every effort to get to the bottom of any such allegations. As you know, the Deputy Attorney General has appointed a special counsel to investigate the matters related to the Russian interference in the 2016 election. I'm here today to address several issues that have been specifically raised before this committee. And I appreciate the opportunity to respond to questions as fully as the Lord enables me to do so. But as I advise you, Mr. Chairman, and consistent with longstanding Department of Justice practice, I cannot and will not violate my duty to protect the confidential communications I have with the President. Now, let me address some issues directly. I did not have any private meetings, nor do I recall any conversations with any Russian officials at the Mayflower Hotel. I did not attend any meetings at that event separate. Prior to the speech I attended a reception with my staff that included at least 24 people and President Trump, though I do recall several conversations that I had during that pre-speech reception. I do not have any recollection of meeting or talking to the Russian ambassador or any other Russian officials. If any brief interaction occurred in passing with the Russian ambassador during that reception, I do not remember it. After the speech, I was interviewed by the news media. There was an area for that in a different room, and then I left the hotel. But whether I ever attended a reception where the Russian ambassador was also present is entirely beside the point of this investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 campaign. Let me state this clearly, colleagues. I have never met with or had any conversation with any Russians or any foreign officials concerning any type of interference with any campaign or election in the United States. Further, I have no knowledge of any such conversations by anyone connected to the Trump campaign. I was your colleague in this body for 20 years, at least some of you, and I and the suggestion that I participated in any collusion, that I was aware of any collusion with the Russian government to hurt this country, which I have served with honor for 35 years, or to undermine the integrity of our democratic process, is an appalling and detestable lie. Relatedly, there is the assertion that I did not answer Senator Franken's question honestly at my confirmation hearing. Colleagues, that is false. I can't say colleagues now. I'm no longer a part of this body, but former colleagues, that is false. This is what happened. Senator Franken asked me a rambling question after some 6 hours of testimony that included dramatic new allegations that the United States intelligence community, the U.S. intelligence community, had advised President-elect Trump, quote, that there was a continuing exchange of information during the campaign between Trump's surrogates and intermediaries for the Russian government. Close quote. I was taken aback by that explosive allegation, which he said was being reported as breaking news that very day, and which I had not heard. I wanted to refute that immediately, any suggestion that I was part of such an activity. I replied, quote, I replied to Senator Franken this way, quote, Senator Franken, I'm not aware of any of those activities. I have been called a surrogate a time or two in that campaign, and I did not have communications with the Russians, and I'm unable to comment on it. Close quote. That was the context in which I was asked the question, and in that context, my answer was a fair and correct response to the charge as I understood it. I was responding to this allegation that we had met surrogates had been meeting with the Russians on a regular basis. It simply did not occur to me to go further than the context of the question and to list any conversations that I may have had with Russians in routine situations, as I had had many routine meetings with other foreign officials. So please hear me now. And it was only in March, after my confirmation hearing, that a reporter asked my spokesperson whether I had ever met with any Russian officials. This was the first time that question had squarely been posed to me. On the same day, we provided that reporter with the information related to the meeting that I and my staff had held in my Senate office with Ambassador Kislyak, as well as the brief encounter in July after a speech that I had given during the convention in Cleveland, Ohio. I also provided the reporter with a list of 25 foreign ambassador meetings that I'd had during 2016. In addition, I provided supplemental testimony to the Senate Judiciary Committee to explain this event. So I readily acknowledge these two meetings, and certainly not one thing happened that was improper in any one of those meetings. Let me also explain clearly the circumstances of my recusal from the investigation into the Russian interference with the 2016 election. Please, colleagues, hear me on this. I was sworn in as Attorney General on Thursday, February 9th. The very next day, as I had promised to the Judiciary Committee I would do, at least at an early date, I met with career department officials, including a senior ethics official, to discuss some things publicly reported in the press that might have some bearing on whether or not I should recuse myself in this case. From that point, February 10th, until I announced my formal recusal on March 2nd, I was never briefed on any investigative details, did not access any information about the investigation. I received only the limited information that the department's career officials determined was necessary for me to form and make a recusal decision. As such, I have no knowledge about this investigation as it is ongoing today beyond what has been publicly reported. I don't even read that carefully.
All right, we'll take a break here. And I think that this testimony went very well for Sessions and for Trump. We'll be right back. Carrying on with this opening statement by Jeff Sessions. Here we go.
And I have taken no action whatsoever with regard to any such investigation. On the date of my formal recusal, my chief of staff sent an email to the heads of relevant departments, including by name to Director Comey of the FBI, to instruct them to inform their staffs of this recusal and to advise them not to brief me or involve me in any way in any such matters. And in fact, they have not. Importantly, I recuse myself not because of any asserted wrongdoing or any belief that I may have been involved in any wrongdoing in the campaign, but because a Department of Justice regulation, 28 CFR 45.2, I felt required it. That regulation states, in effect, that department employees should not participate in investigations of a campaign if they serve as a campaign advisor. So the scope of my recusal, however, does not and cannot interfere with my ability to oversee the Department of Justice, including the FBI, which has an $8 billion budget and 35,000 employees. I presented to the president my concerns and those of Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein about the ongoing leadership issues at the FBI, as stated in my letter recommending the removal of Mr. Comey, along with the Deputy Attorney General's memorandum on that issue, which have been released publicly by the White House. Those represent a clear statement of my views. I adopted Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein's points that he made in his memorandum and made my recommendation. It is absurd, frankly, to suggest that a recusal from a single specific investigation would render the Attorney General unable to manage the leadership of the various Department of Justice law enforcement components that conduct thousands of investigations. Finally, during his testimony, Mr. Comey discussed a conversation that he and I had about the meeting Mr. Comey had with the president. I'm happy to share with the committee my recollection of that conversation that I had with Mr. Comey. Following a routine morning threat briefing, Mr. Comey spoke to me and my chief of staff. While he did not provide me with any of the substance of his conversation with the president, apparently the day before, Mr. Comey expressed concern about proper communications protocol with the White House and with the president. I responded. He didn't recall this, but I responded to his comment by agreeing that the FBI and the Department of Justice needed to be careful to follow department policies regarding appropriate contacts with the White House. Mr. Comey had served in the department for better than two decades, and I was confident that he understood and would abide by the well-established rules limiting communications with the White House, especially about ongoing investigations. That's what's so important to control. My comments encouraged him to do just that, and indeed, as I understand it, he in fact did that. Our Department of Justice rules on proper communications between the department and the White House have been in place for years. Mr. Comey well knew them. I thought and assumed correctly that he complied with them. So I'll finish with this. I recused myself from any investigation into the campaign for president, but I did not recuse myself from defending my honor against scurrilous and false allegations. At all times throughout the course of the campaign, the confirmation process, and since becoming Attorney General, I have dedicated myself to the highest standards. I've earned a reputation for that. At home and in this body, I believe, over decades of performance. The people of this country expect an honest and transparent government, and that's what we're giving them. This president wants to focus on the people of this country to ensure they are treated fairly and kept safe. The Trump agenda is to improve the lives of the American people. I know some have different ways of achieving this and different agendas, but that is his agenda, and it's one I share. Importantly, as Attorney General, I have a responsibility to enforce the laws of this nation, to protect this country from its enemies, and to ensure the fair administration of justice.
All right, that's all we can have time for, but that's the substance of his testimony. We'll take a break. We'll come back after the hour. Republicans, like sitting ducks on a baseball field, shot by an anti-GOP fanatic. We'll be back to talk more about that, Kelly O'Connell. We talked in the beginning of the show about the fire in London, and then we got into a little bit of Jeff Sessions, his testimony. I've got some more on the fire, but it appears they're stating that nobody on the top three floors survived. Excuse me. And here's just a few brief clips from the fire.
He's made the rope from his blanket and he sent it down. These guys need a megaphone, bro. Oh, there's another guy there as well.
Been catching, yeah?
Bro.
Just been catching. And look, this guy's making. We're trying to escape. Oh, my days. Look, this guy's trying to escape.
Oh, my days. Oh,
my days. Made a rope and everything.
Yeah, there are people in the rooms that were flashing lights. And they say what caused the start of the fire was a faulty refrigerator, believe it or not. And this is from the Daily Mirror. This is a daylight shot the next day. Still burning. I think they're going to have to tear this tower down. It was so completely engulfed in flames. People waving blankets out the window and then people turning lights off and on so that people would know where they were. And here's a lady who was talking about a woman screaming, "Just save my babies."
Around 12:30, nearly 1 o'clock, my mum called me and was like, "There's a fire outside." So we went outside. By the time I'd got there, the whole left side, right side of the building was on fire. The whole thing was engulfed in flames. And you could hear people screaming, "Help me, help me, help me." So me and my brother and some other people who lived in the area ran over to the estate where you could actually still get underneath it. And there's people like throwing their kids out, "Just save my children, just save my children." And like the fire brigade, the ambulance and the police, they couldn't do nothing. Within another 15 minutes, the whole thing was up in flames. And there's still people like at their windows, "Help me, help me, help me." And there you can see the fire going into the house and into the last room that they're in and just engulfing their whole apartment.
Yeah. Wow. Unbelievable pictures. Here's a little bit on what caused the fire. And more shots of the flames racing up the building. One witness said a man was beside himself after telling other residents of fire-ravaged Grenville Tower that his faulty fridge had sparked the blaze. And then they had told Theresa May, the Prime Minister's staff, about these buildings and that they hadn't done anything about it. I don't know anything about that, of course. But anyway, a lot of people, it looks like, could be dead, burned to a crisp up in this tower building. Now, back to Jeff Sessions. And, you know, this is really, I have to say, really pathetic. Just this idea that if it's not Russia, it has to be something else. I honestly think that the Democrats have completely lost their way. If the only thing that they have is Russia, and doesn't that look like it? Your only idea is that your opponent colluded with Russia. That's the theory that you have to bring forward the country. I mean, it's just pathetic. They act like if they get Trump out of office, they'll save the whole world. It's really terribly sad. Here's a little bit on between Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon and Comey about the secret innuendo.
Holding this hearing in the open, in full view of the American people where it belongs. I believe the American people have had it with stonewalling. Americans don't want to hear that answers to relevant questions are privileged and off limits, or that they can't be provided in public, or that it would be, quote, inappropriate for witnesses to tell. They know. We are talking about an attack on our democratic institutions and stonewalling of any kind is unacceptable. And General Sessions has acknowledged...
The stonewalling with a lisp is hilarious. Stonewalling.
It's not a question. Last Thursday, I asked former Director Comey about the FBI's interactions with you, General Sessions, prior to your stepping aside from the Russian investigation. Mr. Comey said that your continued engagement with the Russian investigation was, quote, problematic, and he, Mr. Comey, could not discuss it in public. Mr. Comey also said that FBI personnel had been calling for you to step aside from the investigation at least 2 weeks before you finally did so. Now, in your prepared statement, you stated you received only, quote, limited information necessary to inform your recusal decision. But given Director Comey's statement, we need to know what that was. Were you aware of any concerns at the FBI or elsewhere in government about your contacts with the Russians or any other matters relevant to whether you should step aside from the Russian investigation?
Senator Wyden, I am not stonewalled. I am following the policies of the Department of Justice. You don't walk into any hearing or committee meeting and reveal confidential communications with the President of the United States, who's entitled to receive confidential communications in your best judgment about a host of issues, and have to be accused of stonewalling for not answering them. So I would push back on that. Secondly, Mr. Comey, perhaps he didn't know, but I basically recused myself the first day I got into the office because I never accessed files. I never learned the names of investigators. I never met with them. I never asked for any documentation. The documentation, what little I received, was mostly already in the media and was presented by the senior ethics public responsibility, professional responsibility attorney in the department.
General.
And I made a honest and proper a decision to recuse myself, as I told Senator Feinstein and the members of the committee I would do it when they confirmed me.
General Sessions, respectfully, you're not answering the
question. Well, what is the question?
The question is, Mr. Comey said that there were matters.
Jeff Sessions is laughing at this guy as he sits there, this old guy lisping, stonewalling.
With respect to the recusal, that were problematic and he couldn't talk about them. What are they?
Why don't you tell me? They are none, Senator Wyden. There are none. I can tell you that for absolute certainty. This is a secret innuendo being leaked out there about me, and I don't appreciate it. And I've tried to give my best and truthful answers to any committee I've appeared before, and it's really people are suggesting through innuendo that I have been not honest about matters, and I've tried to be honest.
My time is short. You've made your point that you think Mr. Comey is engaging in innuendo. We're going to keep digging.
Well,
on this.
Senator Wyden, he did not say that.
He said it was problematic, and I asked you what was problematic about it.
Some of that leaked out of the committee that he said in closed sessions.
Okay. One more question. I asked former FBI director whether your role in firing him violated your recusal, given that President Trump said he fired Comey because of the Russian investigation. Director Comey said this was a reasonable question. So I want to ask you just point blank, why did you sign the letter recommending the firing of Director Comey when it violated your recusal?
It did not violate my recusal. It did not violate my recusal. That would be the answer to that. And the letter that I signed represented my views that had been formulated for some time.
Mr. Chairman, just if I can finish, that answer, in my view, doesn't pass the smell test. The president tweeted repeatedly about his anger at investigations into his associates in Russia. The day before you wrote your letter, he tweeted that the collusion story was a total hoax and asked, when will this taxpayer-funded charade end? I don't think your answer passes the smell test.
Well, Senator Wyden, I think I should be allowed to briefly respond at least and would cite the letter, the memorandum that Senator, that Deputy Rosenstein wrote, and my letter that accompanied it represented my views of the situation.
These guys seem so, they're like the Keystone Cops, just nonsense. Is that what the Democratic Party stands for now? Just a bunch of joke accusations that have no substance, and as soon as they're looked into, they fall apart. 717 AM Las Cruces, AM 1455, 23, 1450. If you're a Democrat, you might want to start thinking about Plan B. Kelly O'Connell will be right back.
Will you and your friend come around? You and your friend gonna get on down.
I've got a summary of the testimony that lasts about 5 minutes if you're just tuning in. Now, the Cosby trial, the longer that a jury sits out, the better it is for the defendant, because it means that they have not quickly decided that the person is guilty. So here is your 5 minute summary of the Sessions testimony provided by, CBC News, which is, I think, Canadian Broadcasting Company. Check it out.
Let me state this clearly, colleagues. I have never met with or had any conversation with any Russians or any foreign officials concerning any type of interference with any campaign or election in the United States. And the suggestion that I participated in any collusion, that I was aware of any collusion with the Russian government to hurt this country, which I have served with honor for 35 years, to undermine the integrity of our democratic process is an appalling and detestable lie.
Did you ever have a conversation as a superior of Director Comey with his failure to perform or some of these accusations that he wasn't running the FBI in a good way or that somehow the FBI is in turmoil? Did you have any conversations with Director Comey about those subjects?
I did not.
Did you ever discuss Director Comey's FBI handling of the Russia investigations with the president or anyone else?
Senator Feinstein, that would call for a communication between the Attorney General and the president, and I'm not able to comment on that.
You are not able to answer the question here whether you ever discussed that with him?
That's correct.
You discussed his termination. Why wouldn't you discuss the reasons?
Well, those were put in writing and sent to the president, and he made those public, so he made that public.
Do you know if the president records conversations in the Oval Office or anywhere in the White House?
I do not.
Let me ask you this. If, in fact, any president was to record conversations in their official duties in the White House or the like, would there be an obligation to preserve those records?
I don't know, Senator Rubio. Probably so.
I believe the American people have had it with stonewalling. Americans don't want to hear that answers to relevant questions are privileged and off limits, or that they can't be provided in public, or that it would be, quote, inappropriate for witnesses to tell us what they know.
Senator Wyden, I am not stonewalling.
Respectfully, you're not answering the question.
Well, what is the question?
The question is, Mr. Comey said that there were matters with respect to the recusal that were problematic and he couldn't talk about them. What are they?
Why don't you tell me? They are none, Senator Wyden. There are none. I can tell you that for absolute certainty.
Why do you believe that your recommendation to fire Director Comey was not inconsistent with your March 2nd recusal?
I'm the Attorney General of the United States. It's my responsibility to our Judiciary Committee and other committees to ensure that that department is run properly. I have to make difficult decisions, and I do not believe that it is a sound position to say that if you're recused for a single case, you can't make a decision about the leadership in that agency.
Did any of these falling individuals meet with Russian officials at any point during the campaign? And you can just be a yes or no on this. Paul Manafort?
I don't have any information that he had done so. He served as campaign chairman for a few months.
Steve Bannon?
I have no information that he did.
General Michael Flynn?
I don't recall it.
Reince Priebus?
I don't recall.
Steve Miller?
I don't recall him ever having such a conversation.
Corey Lewandowski?
I don't recall any of those individuals having any meeting with Russian officials.
Carter Page?
I don't know.
Did you have any communication with any Russian businessmen or any Russian nationals?
I don't believe I had any conversation with Russian businessmen or Russian nationals.
Are you aware
Although
of any communication?
A lot of people were at the convention. It's conceivable that somebody
sir,
came
sir,
up
I have
to me.
Just a few.
Well, you let me qualify it. If I don't qualify it, you'll accuse me of lying. So I need to be correct as best I can.
I do want you to be honest.
And I'm not able to be rushed this fast. It makes me nervous.
The last lady that spoke was his name, Kamala Harris. She's the new senator from California, and she's really, in my opinion, she's African American, or she may be mixed. She's trying comes across as trying to be the next Obama, coming in and really trying to make her mark, and it might backfire on her. But anyway, 7:26 and take a break here for local news, 523-1450. Yeah, I don't have my text machine, but we'll soldier on anyway with all this stonewalling.
You and your friends come around. Oh, you and your friends come on.
Okay, so what was the reaction to this testimony? Here is a Democratic senator. Senator Kuhn so what was his reaction to Sessions' testimony?
Today, he raised his right hand before Congress, testified for about 2.5 hours. He was quite defiant, defending his name, fiercely denying claims that he colluded at any time with Russians during the 2016 election, and making clear to allies and critics alike that he wanted this to be a public hearing. Watch.
Let me state this clearly, colleagues. I have never met with or had any conversation with any Russians or any foreign officials concerning any type of interference with any campaign or election in the United States. Further, I have no knowledge of any such conversations by anyone connected to the Trump campaign. I was your colleague in this body for 20 years, at least some of you, and the suggestion that I participated in any collusion, that I was aware of any collusion with the Russian government to hurt this country, which I have served with honor for 35 years, or to undermine the integrity of our democratic process is an appalling and detestable lie.
So there's that. Tonight, Ken Starr is the former special prosecutor appointed to investigate Whitewater and the Monica Lewinsky case under then-President Bill Clinton. And Charles Krauthammer also joins us this evening. But we begin with Democratic Senator Chris Coons, who is a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee and the Crime and Terrorism Subcommittee, which is investigating Russian interference in the 2016 election. Senator, welcome. Good to have you here back with us on the program again tonight. What did you think about his testimony today, and did it put to rest any of your concerns?
Well, that opening quote was classic Jeff Sessions. He is tough, he's combative, and he stood up for himself admirably in his testimony today in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee. The question that I have had all along was one that I raised this morning in front of the Oversight Committee, the Appropriations Subcommittee that's responsible for the Justice Department budget, where he didn't appear, but instead sent his deputy. And that was whether or not Attorney General Sessions violated his recusal. Early on in his service as Attorney General, he notified Congress that he would not be involved in any matter arising either from the investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails or this ongoing matter about potential Russian involvement in our 2016 election or collusion with the Trump campaign to that end. And it seems to me that the memo that was sent by Rod Rosenstein, the Deputy Attorney General, to Attorney General Sessions explaining why he thought FBI Director Comey should be fired directly addressed one of those two matters.
All right,
so I asked Rod Rosenstein, why doesn't this violate the scope of his recusal?
Yeah, I mean, it's ironic because, you know, a lot of Democrats say, well, obviously the president had decided he was going to fire the FBI director no matter what. So I'm not sure why there's so much concern about, you know, Sessions' role in it, given the fact that the argument made from your side has been that the president had decided that long ago on his own. But I do want to get through a couple of things here. This is Senator Tom Cotton, and I want to play this for you and get your thoughts on it.
What do we think happened at the Mayflower? Do you like spy fiction? Have you ever in any of these fantastical situations heard of a plot line so ridiculous that a sitting United States senator and an ambassador of a foreign government colluded at an open setting with hundreds of other people to pull off the greatest caper in the history of espionage?
Senator Coons, what'd you make of that?
Well, Senator Cotton certainly put that question well. I would say part of why these questions have come over and over to representatives of the Trump administration is because there were a series of episodes that were not appropriately initially disclosed, say, for example, the extent to which former National Security Advisor Mike Flynn represented foreign interests and failed to report them, or the extent to which Jared Kushner had meetings with Russian leaders early and explored a back channel in a way that was designed to avoid
knowledge or
oversight.
But for the purposes of this hearing, which is what we were watching today, the question that was dangled by James Comey was, you know, well, there's a third meeting here, and we really can't talk about it in this open session. But, and also he said, you know, I knew that Senator Sessions would recuse himself for reasons that I can't really go into here. So he dangled a lot about, specifically about Attorney General Jeff Sessions.
That's right.
And that, I think, is what Tom Cotton was getting at. I mean, the preposterousness of, you know, Kislyak and Sessions meeting at this big hotel in front of all these people and doing something nefarious does strike you, when you look at it that way, as kind of silly, does it not?
If that were the only contact that were a subject of concern between folks in the Trump campaign and Russians, then it would seem absurd. But the point I was just making...
It is absurd. Come on. Excuse me. All right. I've got a little bit more on the breaking news of this guy getting shot. All right. I have a question. This guy, Scalise, is out playing baseball. Somebody shows up with a rifle and shoots 50 rounds. Now, Scalise has a detail. He supposedly has... either Secret Service or police following him around. Why did nobody shoot this guy who shot for 10 minutes? I mean, was it a... Did somebody decide that they were not going to defend him? I mean, that sounds ridiculous, but... I mean, it's really incredible what's going on. And so the gunman said, before he was killed, apparently said... He wanted to kill as many Republicans as possible. This is the result, in my estimation, if you continually demonize a group of people and put it in the media and put it in the mouths of politicians, a lot of stuff that's totally false, that Trump is a devil, that all the GOP is evil. How are you surprised when someone gets out of a nut house and gets a gun and starts shooting other people? We got a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this? Hey, what's up, Aaron?
Hey, I'm to the point where it's just so pathetic with the allegations of people that nobody can name a source. You know, the Obama crowd did this for years. They talked to our enemies. They did all kinds of sneaky things. They broke the law. And every time that we wanted to call for anything, we got shut down because we didn't have the votes to do anything different. And even when we did have the votes, you know, nobody was doing it because the Republican crowd that's in there now, such as John McCain and a few others, are just part of the swamp. And I just cannot wait for one day when the Republican crowd has the guts to just tell these people to shove off. We're not gonna open up any of your investigations. You know, you can just take a hike and get on with the agenda that this president said he was going to do. And the whole thing with the violence is, you know, at some point we're going to have to stand up and defend ourselves and just put an end to this.
Well, how do you, you know...
...our own plays in Central Park about, you know, eliminating Pelosi, you know,
yeah.
Something like that.
Okay.
You know, they like it.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for the call, Aaron. All right, folks, let's take a little break here. And 638, I'm sorry, my voice is a little shot today. Good points by Aaron. 523-1450 to call in, and we'll be right back. And we're listening to Dire Straits.
Yeah, you don't know. I'm a hungry man. Let me know. One way or the other, so I can make my
So the question is, if it was, if these people, if these congressional leaders had a security detail, how does this guy stand there for 10 minutes shooting? Number one. So it makes me ask the question, could there have been, I know I hate to ask the question, but I'll just throw it out there. Could there have been collusion between the guards and somebody else? Here's my problem with this. I see so many people that are desperately biased against Trump, and people in important positions, people who are supposed to be totally unbiased are revealing bias. And I feel like it has just filtered down through the entire culture. Hitler, Trump is a Hitler, has to be removed, is this theme, without any evidence other than the fact that people don't like his personality and he makes decisions that are sometimes a little abrupt or not by the typical formula that has been followed in Washington. But for example, how is Trump worse than Obama in terms of being an anti-American or anti-patriot? I mean, it's the question answers itself. All right, here's a little bit from the shooting. Representative Scalise shot in the hip. Lawmaker asks, are those Republicans or Democrats out there? This is from Fox.
Live shots here. It looks like a very peaceful neighborhood.
I would also like to add, too, that Congressman DeSantis also added that someone did, he just reporting this, someone did walk up to him and say, are there Republicans or Democrats practicing out in that field? Now, it could have been a coincidence, but he left at 7:10, the shots at 7:15, and there are reports from Congressman Brooks that it came from around the third base side.
All right, now here's a little bit from Newt Gingrich. How did he know where the practice was?
Newt Gingrich, your thoughts.
Well, first of all, people need to take a deep breath, and let's wait and see what we learn about this. I think there's a tendency to rush through a whole series of things and then go back and start correcting. I think all of us should remember what Mo just put out. In addition to keeping Steve in your prayers and his family, there are four other people, probably congressional aides, who also have been shot. And so we should be concerned for all of them.
Absolutely.
And then I think once they're stabilized and once they're going to recover, then I think we should explore what happened with the particular shooter. I'm curious, first of all, how they found out where the practice was. I don't think this was posted publicly, so I'd like to know, somebody doesn't just wake up in the morning randomly and go down the street till they find somebody to shoot at. But I think, again, I think take a deep breath, understand that the first instinct after this is to rush to judgment. We need more information. We need a little bit of time here. And I just want to push back again. In a free society, if you're going to have representative government, everybody below the president and the vice president is going to be at some risk because otherwise you can't reach them. I mean, you start sealing people off, they become an aristocracy of security. So, yes, it's a little frightening. Yes, it's a little dangerous. But I think it's also the price of a free society. And I would hope that we wouldn't rush to tighten things up even more, which is one of our unfortunate habits after each of these incidents.
These people need a security detail that is more efficient than this. And this is from, looking for the most recent one. This is from MSNBC about half an hour ago.
And it's past the top of the hour, and we are in full breaking news mode now here on MSNBC. We're following a shooting in the Washington, D.C. suburb of Alexandria, Virginia, where there was a baseball practice underway for members of Congress getting ready for a big game, bipartisanship being the point of the game tomorrow. A shooting at this park where this baseball practice was taking place. And we are hearing reports of 14 to 50 shots fired, possibly near the second base area of this park where Congressman GOP leader Steve Scalise was. And apparently Congressman Steve Scalise was shot along with an aide. We're also hearing reports that many were trying to come to his rescue, even using a tourniquet, trying to help him. We have reports from witnesses of ambulance taking people to the hospital and that at this point, there is word that a suspect is in custody. Joe?
Yeah, this is an old report. Excuse me, because he's dead. We'll take a break and come back on this for just a second. We have eyewitness testimony or eyewitness remarks from Rand Paul, who was there. Kelly O'Connell AM Las Cruces, 523-1450. Be right back.
When you and your friends go out. When you and your friends go get on.
A Republican House member was shot, and I've got a clip here talking about the trail of blood that he left crawling off the field. Mo Brooks.
Familiar with the movie, Remember the Titans?
Yeah.
Well, we practice on their baseball field, 6:15, 6:30. Tomorrow night is supposed to be the game. Hopefully we'll still have it, but I don't know. It raises about $600,000 for charity, and we played in the Washington Nationals baseball stadium. Frequently the president will come, so it's a pretty good time for all, except for the fact that the Democrats have been beating us so much. Mm-hmm. But I was on deck about to hit batting practice on the third base side of home plate, and I hear a loud around and behind third base in the third base dugout, which is cinder block, I see a rifle. And I see a little bit of a body, and then I hear another blam, and I realize that there's an active shooter. At the same time, I hear Steve Scalise over near second base scream. He was shot. He's our majority whip. The gun was a semi-automatic. It continues to fire at different people. You can imagine all the people in the field scatter. I run around to the first base side of home plate, and we have a batting cage that's got plastic wrapped around it to stop foul balls and hide behind the plastic. You know, that plastic's not real good. And I was lying on the ground with two or three others as the gunfire continues. Heard a break in the gunfire and decided to take a chance. Ran from home plate to the first base dugout, which is also cinder block and down about 2 or 3 feet, so you can have better cover. There were a number of congressmen and congressional staffers who help us lying on the ground. One of them was wounded in the leg, took off my belt, and myself and another congressman, I don't remember who, applied a tourniquet to try to slow down the bleeding. In the meantime, I'm towards the right field side of the dugout, and there's gunfire within about 5 or 6, 7 feet of my head. And I look up, and there's a guy with a gun blasting away. Fortunately, it was one of the good guys, one of our security detail who was shooting back. Of course, it was pistol versus rifle. Our pistols versus the shooter's rifle along the third baseline, just outside the chain link fence. And he was ordering us to stay down. Another security detail person was closer to home plate, probably, I couldn't see him, but probably on the home plate side of the dugout outside the fence line, using the dugout as cover as he's firing back. And there must have been 50 to 100 shots fired. Hard to itemize them. Eventually, it seems that the shooter shot both of our security detail people. There were some congressmen on phones screening for reinforcements. Seemed like a long time when we weren't even hearing sirens from local police officers, which tells me they probably did not yet know what was going on. Eventually, the shooter starts circling around third base. This is my understanding. Of course, I'm down on the ground helping the guy who's got a bullet hole in his leg. And the shooter starts coming around the home plate towards we are outside the fence line. And my understanding is that's where our security detail, maybe some of the ones who were wounded, still defending us, took him down. So, at which point, once we got the all clear that the shooter was down, we ran out to second base for Steve Scalise. He had crawled into the outfield with leaving a trail of blood. And we started giving him some liquids. I put pressure on his wound in his hip. And Brad Winstrip, congressman from Ohio, Cincinnati, fortunately, he's a physician. He started doing what you need to do to try to minimize the blood loss. Shortly thereafter, more of the police showed up. Again, it seemed like forever, but it probably was shorter than what it seemed. And a helicopter landed in center field and took away whomever the folks decided was the most wounded, most critical. I don't know who that person was. At that time, the police were causing all of us to gather outside the first baseline in the chain link fence and cordoning off the area in order to help assure that if there was a second shooter, that we would be better protected.
So I also have a little clip here, see if we have enough time. Well, Rand Paul, I had a clip from him, but I have a kind of summary clip here real quick. From Tom Bevin, who started Real Clear Politics. Democrats move from collusion to obstruction to emoluments. Those idea that Trump is making money, especially in foreign places, by taking advantage, like Takashi said yesterday, taking advantage of the business opportunities of being president. Now, here's Bevin.
There's a chance that Capitol Hill moves on. I mean, when does the onus shift? I've asked this a couple of times to different panels and different people. When does it shift? Does it ever shift to produce a there? Otherwise, we all need to move on.
I don't think so. Look, theoretically, in a perfect world, Bob Mueller comes out, absolves, with a decision that either absolves the president or moves forward the investigation. And that is sort of the decisive moment. But I do think we've seen Democrats, and part of this is because of the base of their party. This they do not believe that Trump is the legitimate president. They want to see him removed by any means necessary. And so there was initially collusion, then we're moving to obstruction. Now we're moving. Democratic attorney generals of states suing on the emoluments clause. They're going to turn to his business dealings. So I think despite even if Bob Mueller comes out with a decisive opinion one way or the other, this is going to carry on.
All right. Now, there's a claim out there that, and I believe it's from Gingrich, that Mueller is putting together a group of people to take down Trump. Now, how true that is, I don't have any idea, but I know that Mueller is a liberal, and this entire group of liberals acts like this is the greatest idea in human history to get rid of Trump. So, I mean, I've never seen anything as mindless and totally dedicated as this since the Nazis. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Where do you get the point that Bob Mueller is a liberal?
He is a liberal. He is a liberal. Let me ask you something, because I'm short of voice today. Hold on a second. Where is your smoking gun? Where is the proof that Sessions or Trump or anybody else did anything? Your side is a laughingstock.
The world is laughing at your side. And it's smoking gun business there, Kelly O, who has a cold right now. Let me tell you something. They didn't have the evidence and whatnot during Nixon, and we found it. Or actually, it was your guys that were honest and put the country to the party. Yes, sir. I'm telling you, we're going to find it, and we're going to bury it. That's it.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for the call. Have a good day. All right. more warm thoughts from our friend. All right, here we got a little Gaffigan for you, a little Laughigan. Here we go.
Ivanka and the family. I mean, she's, when we talk about the family, she's sort of the most prominent member. And there was just a story that she was over in Germany. She was asked by the Chancellor Merkel to go over there, and she was booed.
Right.
She's been accosted here, you know, a couple of times. But more broadly, you know, the... Well, what do you think about her treatment? Is she being treated?
Well, this is Gaffigan. It's supposed to be Gaffigan. I don't hear his voice. Well, actually, that was Tom Bevan talking about that. So anyway, we're beyond the time of a little comedy clip, but it's been kind of a strange day. Please keep Scalise in your prayers. Keep Frankie also in your prayers for his mental health. I've never seen people obsessed like this. If you hate somebody and you have to go find evidence that they're bad, you've got it upside down. That's not the American way. We give people the benefit of the doubt. We let them have a shot. We don't say from the moment that they're born that they're evil, that they're the Antichrist. Anyway, thanks for tuning in, and enjoyed hanging out with you today. And I'll take you out with a little bit of Dire Straits, Kelly O'Connell. I should be feeling a little bit better. I think it's my sickness has peaked today, so... Have a great day. See you back in 22 hours. Thanks for hanging out. Ciao.
Imagination working on.